This is a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network, WDPN, bringing you the very best in internet talk radio.
You have reached the end of the dungeon, and I hope you stocked up on your potions, folks, because you have reached the boss fight. Welcome to Boss Fight, the WDPN video game podcast. My name is Kevin Kessler, and I am joined by two huge gaming nerds here today. Right over here across from me, which I don't know why I'm saying, because you can't see who's sitting where. I could say he's above me on the ceiling, and you wouldn't know. Mr. TJ Bogard.
Hello, I'm TJ, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.
Awesome, awesome. That doesn't sound rehearsed at all.
Not even a little bit.
And folks, to my right, because I'm just going to go with where people are sitting today, is the apple of my eye, my wife, Jay Lee herself, Jacqueline Leon Kessler.
Good morning, gamers!
Wow, that was awesome. Yeah, you sounded very excited.
I am.
So folks, I am very excited. When we first came up with the concept for WDPN, one of the very first ideas that was brought up for a show was a video game podcast, was this show, Boss Fight, though it wasn't called Boss Fight at the time. It's gone through many names. Then I found out most names are already taken. So you've arrived on Boss Fight. If you don't like the name, don't blame me. It's everybody, blame all the other podcasts for stealing all the good.
No, it's definitely your fault.
Yeah, absolutely. So for our first game, the way this show is going to work, it's not going to be like gaming news or anything like that. It's going to be mostly each week we're going to take one game and just dissect it like a frog in biology class. We are going to dig deep into this game, really flesh it out, explain things, go into the story, the gameplay, everything, this, that, and the other thing. And we have chosen for our first show, quite possibly, arguably, I've heard many arguments for this, the greatest RPG ever made. What do you guys,
I would have to agree.
In my opinion, hands down. No doubt about it.
Yes. And folks, we are talking about none other than Legend of Legaia. Ha! No, I'm kidding. We are talking about Final Fantasy VII, the Square Enix, at the time Squaresoft RPG, that changed the face of the gaming world forever. I mean, I remember as a wee seventh grader getting it for Christmas, and it was my first RPG ever.
Same here. Same here.
Yeah, you'd never done any
game that brought me right into the genre.
Yeah,
never played a game before.
So you had never done an RPG before. You'd never done like a Zelda or anything like that.
Yeah, I played Zelda when I was a kid, but on this scale, I've never played any game like this before.
Okay, and Jackie, was it your first RPG as well?
It was, and since then I've been hooked on the RPG genre.
Yeah, I think, definitely. You know, and I think this is a pretty common thing with a lot of people, especially with the Final Fantasy series. A lot of people didn't jump on to RPGs, as well as the Final Fantasy series as a whole, until Final Fantasy VII, and because this is really the first RPG game, I think, that you saw commercials for on TV.
Oh yeah, they really, really pushed this game big time.
Do you remember those commercials?
I absolutely do, yeah. No, that's the one thing that drew me to it was, you know, in previous games of this type, there's really no movie scenes. There's no cut scenes that were at this scale.
Right.
It was just amazing.
Hold the microphone a little closer.
All of the movies that you see in the game, they took you to a different place. And you know, looking back on it, it doesn't really, you know, play with the test of time. But back then, it was the most beautiful thing that you've ever seen in a video game.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think that, like, when I first saw the commercials, I think I mistakenly thought that the entire game looked like that.
I think a lot of people did.
So, like, in my mind, I'm picturing, like, running around in these CG graphics and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, what are these polygon people doing?
The thing is, this game definitely set the standard. Like, I think a lot of games... this game definitely set the standard for other RPGs to come, and it has a really good replay value. I mean, I can still play it now. I can still play it now, and it's still very, very good. You know, I really thoroughly enjoy it, even though the graphics are crap compared to what we have now.
Yeah, and all three of us have actually played this game within the last year.
Yeah, I make it a point to play it at least once every 2 years. Well, I have a rotation of games where I just have to continually go back just because they're that impressive.
But now, how often do you play FF7, like start a new game and actually go through to the end?
Start a new game going through to the end, probably literally once every 2 years.
Really? Because, see, with FF7, I feel like more than any other game, I get a lot of people that tell me, like, I start to play this game and, like, you know, like, you're homesick for a day or something like that. This used to be me in high school. I'd be homesick for a day, pop in FF7, I'm going to go all the way through.
Right, right.
You get to, like, the end of Midgar, and then you just kind of stop.
Well, yeah. Midgar is really that point where, you know, it makes or breaks you.
If it's
you
the point of no return.
If you get past Midgar and you keep going, you're in it for the long haul. If you get to Midgar and you're already bored, might as well turn back, start again another day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Midgar is definitely the windmill from Back to the Future 3. Like, when you get to the windmill,
oh, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
There's no turning back, and it's the future or bust. That's a really good point. So, the story of Final Fantasy VII is one of the richest stories ever put into a video game, I think. Also, however, one of the most complicated.
Yes. Convoluted is probably the word I'd use.
Yes. And I would say that a lot of people don't really fully understand it, even after playing it so many times.
It took me probably about 5 or 6 playthroughs before I really kind of picked up on most of it. And even then, it almost took, you know, a little extra research, you know, going online, reading about opinions, you know, doing things like that, before I really understood that story 100%.
Well, even I think, like, I remember I mentioned to you, like, a year or so ago, and I was like, oh, well, you know, Genova's an alien, and you were like, what?
Alien,
that's
what?
News to me. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think about the story, Jackie?
I thought it was really beautifully written, but a lot of things may have been lost in translation.
Absolutely.
Yes,
like the Cetra, yes. For instance, when it's discussed in the game that they go from planet to, like, they migrate to the planet and then they move on after settling.
Right, they find the promised land.
But people think they're like an alien race, when in fact it could mean land, not planet.
Right.
As in they're migratory, moving from continent to continent.
Yes, and we'll go into what the ancients actually are in a little bit, because I did a lot of research on this, and you know, I think I have a pretty good understanding of it.
Look at you studying.
Yeah, I know. It's almost like I'm starting to learn from my mistakes. Over on my other shows with Kevin Clark, he always yells at me for my horrid show prep when we're talking about NXT on WWE Network, and I didn't know the name of the guy that won the title.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's kind of important, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking of show prep, can we decide right now how we're calling Eris? Is it Eris?
We're calling her Eris.
Yeah, we're calling her Eris.
We're going Eris.
I always
called
her Eris.
I don't speak with a lisp, and yeah, I feel like I do.
Yes.
Calling
yes.
her the actual
Something's
way that she's
with
supposed
my tongue.
To be called.
Well, okay, folks. Let me explain that for you a little bit. When they brought Final Fantasy VII over from Japan, I guess they were, Sony people from Japan were explaining to the American translators who these characters are. And they said, you know, the character Aerith, which is, it's the way it's supposed to be with the TH, and that's what it's been in everything since. But I guess with the Japanese accent, they said, oh, yeah, this character, her name is Aerith. Mm-hmm. And they were like, cool, Eris.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I apologize to any Japanese people I may have just offended.
Well, you know. Yeah, this was the first kind of the real step into why we need localization teams in gaming. Because a lot of games are flawless in Japan, and then they come over to here, and you know, the dialogue gets a little choppy, and you just don't quite understand what they're trying to get across.
Well, the translations, I think, a lot of translations were really lost with this game, because there was a lot of, like, just things that are said that just doesn't, that they don't make sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to think. I knew, like, when we were last playing it, I was making note of, like, oh, wow, that didn't make sense, and that didn't make sense. I mean, like, well, let's put it, Barrett's dialogue is the most stereotypical black dialogue.
Yeah, whenever they just get lost, they just, you know what, throw in a curse word here and there, and it'll fill in the blanks. That's
Yo,
enough.
Tifa, you all right? And they spell it A-W-R-I-T-E or something like that. Like,
oh, she.
Like, this is the way Japanese people think black people talk. Because, you know, there are no black people over there.
Yep, and then you have Sid, the stereotypical farmer, you know, hick. You know,
God damn it. So drunk all the time.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Just cranky as hell. But then there were a lot of things, just like things that the characters would say. And you're like, that line made no sense.
Like, can you none think of one that really popped out?
No. You know what? Off the top of my head, I can't think of it. But if I'm playing it, I'm pointing it out. I'm like, God, that was horrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know it exactly when you see it. And it's something that just flies right through your head. You know, in one ear, out the other, as in, you know, what just even happened? I have no idea what I'm reading.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the story of FF7 centers around a group of, so the Shinra Electric Power Company, the evil organization, the evil corporate organization of the week, it is a power-hungry, money-grubbing company that is sapping away the very lifeblood of the planet to provide cheap electric power to their people. And we follow our group of heroes who are valiantly attempting to save the planet by destroying the Shinra Power Company. And then that is all shot to hell when the super soldier, to end all super soldiers, the most... I'm trying to think of the right word to describe him.
Badass?
Yeah, the most badass, the most... The word I'm thinking of starts with an M.
Malevolent?
Malevolent. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. I kept trying to say Maleficent.
Yeah, I was fighting with that one myself.
Yeah, the most malevolent villain Square has ever created, and that is Sephiroth. And he shows up, and then it's like, now we've got, not only are we fighting the Shinra, but we're also fighting this guy Sephiroth, who, for all intents and purposes, can destroy the planet, will destroy the planet, and is just a general, just evil demigod.
Ultimate thorn in your side.
Yes. Okay, so, things that people may have missed in this game. First of all, Genova. I think a lot of people mistakenly think of Genova as just some monster from the planet, or some... I've heard people think Genova's a weapon.
I've was always under the impression that she was created, was a bioweapon.
Yeah.
You know, grown in a lab.
Some people think Genova is an ancient, but they even go...
right, yeah.
Like, they say in the game that's not accurate. Genova is described as the crisis from the sky. It fell from the sky, which basically means Genova is an alien life form from another world that travels from planet to planet and just, you know, messes stuff up. It lands on the planet. The northern crater is actually created. That's the point where Genova...
Because of Genova's fall, right.
It's the point where Genova struck the planet and approached the Cetra, disguised as one of them. Infects them with a virus, really kind of leads to the extinction of the Cetra until a few of them band together and just kind of freeze Genova. Genova is something that is so important to the FF7 story, but it's something that not a lot of people get, I feel.
Aren't the Cetra mutated?
Yes.
Like, there are some mutated Genova Cetra releases and then some that are still human?
Yeah, which I think is the reason why there's so many monsters in that world, is because Genova releases a virus that mutates the Cetra into monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are just a few survivors that just kind of band together and stop Genova. Now, the main thing that everyone seems to be looking for in this story is the Promised Land. What do you guys think the Promised Land means? TJ, what do you think?
I mean, originally it was more just a metaphor of something that they were never going to actually find. Just a general, you know, heaven, you know, whatever your, you know, interpretation of that is. Just a place that they were constantly looking for that didn't actually exist.
Jackie, what do you think?
Well, they were migratory people, so they were always looking for something better, and they were hoping that this place existed.
Right.
So I think, yeah, it was just something that they were seeking out, and, you know, whether or not they found it, it was their hope.
Right, and I think that's the important thing, is that the Promised Land, it really seems to be as a state of mind and not so much a... like an actual physical location.
Right, it didn't physically exist, but you could theoretically get there through some sort of nirvana.
Like, Shinra's plan in this entire game is find the Promised Land and pillage it of all Mako energy. And it's like, that's like evil or company being like, we are going to take over heaven!
Exactly. We are going to filter into your brain and take all of your good thoughts out of it. And
yes.
That's all we're going to
do. Yes, we are going to settle in imagination land. Narnia will be ours!
We are going to the land of make-believe right now.
Yes. But when they get to the northern crater in Disc 2... Rufus says something like, oh, this is the Promised Land. And Hojo's like, you're a freaking idiot.
Yeah.
Like, when I first played, I thought that the area around the crater was the Promised Land.
Me too. Absolutely. I thought that's the whole goal, was to get there.
And, yeah.
Well, it looks pretty ominous, so
yeah.
You figure something big happened.
But it's not the
Promised Land. But it wasn't that.
But it's not the Promised Land, because, as we said, Eris even says that the Promised Land is where you go... when the Cetra complete their migratory journey, they reach the Promised Land, which I took that to mean death.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Once they finish their journey, they finally can reach their Promised Land of you know, release.
Right. And I think that means the Promised Land, I think, basically means the life stream.
That could, you know, that actually makes sense.
Because
that
they become one with the planet again.
Right.
Which is what they always had a connection with.
Right, and the life stream is what fuels the planet and gives it life. And that's where the Mako energy comes from, though. The Mako comes from the life stream. Mm-hmm. So basically, the Mako reactors. And by the way, was I alone that when I first played the game, I said Mako?
I also said Mako. I said it too. I was actually curious about that right now because I still call it Mako.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't take Japanese. But yeah, now that I know a little Japanese, I'm like, yeah, it's Mako. I was wrong.
Yeah. The Mako reactors are sucking up the life stream, basically. So it's like, picture like. It's like a machine. It's like your lights are powered by the souls of the dead.
That's pretty twisted.
That's kind of nuts.
When you think about it, it is very twisted. Okay, the other concept that people don't seem to really grasp with this game that I wanted to clear up is the concept of the Genova Reunion and the Sephiroth clones.
Right.
Okay, the Genova Reunion is... What do you guys think the Genova Reunion means?
To be honest with you, when I first was getting into it, I mean, and still now, I guess, because I haven't really done too much, you know, extra research on it, I assumed that there were parts of Genova scattered all across everywhere. Not necessarily like an arm and a leg, you know, things like that, but just, you know, pieces of Genova's, I guess, essence, and that was embodied in these people that looked like they were about to throw up at any given moment.
Very weak,
just, you know, on their last legs, just trying to get back together to make Genova whole again.
Jackie, yeah, I thought there were just more alien creatures.
You thought they were full-out alien creatures?
The first time I played it, I have to admit, I was completely confused at that point. I was like, well, what exactly does that mean? Are there more Genova? Are they fragments of Genova they're trying to put together?
Really do a great job of explaining it. I found out what the Genova Reunion is, basically. Genova was discovered frozen by Professor Gast of Shinra Corporation. Gast and Hojo, along with Lucrezia Crescent, conduct what's called the Genova Project, where they take the body of Genova, which never fully recovered from when the Cetra sealed it, and they extract blood and cells and tissue and implant it into human beings in an attempt to create a soldier with the abilities of a Cetra. Right. Now, basically, what they didn't know was that the cells of Genova itself still correspond back to Genova. They still communicate back. They still want to come back together. So the Genova Reunion Theory, which was developed by Hojo, which is basically states that when Genova is separated, even a single cell will one day attempt to return back to Genova.
Okay.
So Sephiroth is created when Hojo knocks up Lucrezia and says, hey, how about we just take the kid and inject it with the Genova? And that is why Sephiroth believes Genova is his mother, because he has more Genova in him than anyone else.
Okay.
And that's why when you talk about a Sephiroth clone, it's actually a really inaccurate term. Cloud is not a clone of Sephiroth. He was not, I used to be like, how could he be a clone? He looks nothing like him. What they mean is Cloud has Genova in him, because when Nibelheim, that whole issue happened with him and Zack, Cloud was injected with Genova, a lot of it. And that's why he's able to function, but that's why Sephiroth has control over him, is because the Genova inside of him.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
And now here's the other thing. The Sephiroth that kills President Shinra, the Sephiroth that kills Eris, the Sephiroth that you chase for the first two discs of this game is not Sephiroth.
Mind blown when I figured that one out.
Yeah, I figured that out far later than I care to admit. That is Genova, folks. Like, now everyone thinks that Sephiroth storms into the Shinra building, rips open Genova's cell, and takes Genova out. Not true. What happens is that Genova body, the headless Genova body that you find in the Shinra building, turns into Sephiroth and breaks itself out.
Right.
Because Sephiroth's body is in the Northern Crater controlling Genova.
Yep. His body was in the Northern Crater this entire time.
Yep. And what you are chasing that entire time is Sephiroth controlling Genova's body. That's why all of a sudden when you meet up with Sephiroth in the cargo ship, and he drops Genova life at you, or Genova birth.
Birth, right.
Yeah, it's birth. Basically he just rips a piece off of himself and throws it at you.
Mm-hmm. Here you go. Enjoy.
You know, when same thing when you fight Genova Synthesis at the, in the Forgotten City. And when you fight Genova Death, that's actually that Sephiroth that you've been chasing.
Okay. Because
if you even see the way that boss fight starts, Sephiroth knocks him down, Cloud gets up, and Sephiroth turns around, and the fight starts.
Yeah, it's Genova, birth, life, wait, which one's first? Death or synthesis?
I believe. Oh, sorry, synthesis is the last one.
Yeah.
Synthesis
I'm sorry.
Is the last one.
Yes, yeah, I'm sorry, it was birth, life, of them both. Yes, birth, life, death, synthesis. Mm-hmm. Synthesis is like supposed to be the perfected, completed
right,
Genova.
Right, right, right.
But now the Genova reunion takes a different step here, because it's not a Genova, like, Genova is not, the pieces aren't coming back to Genova, they're coming back to Sephiroth at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He is becoming, taking over
right.
all
They're
of Genova.
Going to the Northern Crater. He is basically more Genova than Genova.
Exactly. And he's controlling all of it because he's become so powerful. Like I said, Genova never really recovers from when it was sealed by the Cetra. And that's, I think a lot of people don't realize that. And I think we probably just blew a lot of minds right now with that.
Probably. Yeah, probably. Because I didn't at all, you know, until you kind of look a little deeper into it.
Yeah.
And then you figure all that stuff out. I don't know how much of that can be blamed on localization team, or
I think
if
a lot
it could
of it.
Just be maybe it was that confusing in
the
Japan.
The story
as well.
Was just yeah. confusing.
It's a very rich story.
Well, Square mm-hmm. Enix has a tendency to do that.
They do, absolutely.
You know, in two weeks' time, folks, you're going to hear us talk about Kingdom Hearts, and
oh,
they do it with that too.
Mm-hmm. Big time. I'm still confused with that one.
Yeah. So let's talk about the fact that in a pre-DLC world. Final Fantasy still gave us optional party members.
Right.
That being Yuffie, and arguably one of the most popular characters in the entire game, popular enough where he got his own spin-off game, in Vincent.
Right.
Right.
So, did you guys always, like, so in the first playthrough, did you get both Yuffie and Vincent?
Always, every time.
Yep.
No, ashamed to say, I only got Yuffie the first time.
Really?
I did not get Vincent.
Did you know about Vincent, or did you just...
Well,
you
I had the strategy guide, but I just stuck with Yuffie, and I was like, well, yeah. I guess I don't really
it
have to get
like
Vincent.
It's like, oh, this is a lot of work, huh?
Right, right.
Yeah, kind of. I was kind of just blasting through it, which is the opposite of how I game now, which is
right.
I have to do everything.
Completionist over here.
I must
yeah.
get 100%.
Yeah, you both are completionists.
Back then, I would just barrel
now,
through.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've definitely turned that page into, into completionists.
I still barrel.
It's a rough life to live,
but
you know, someone's got
to
do it.
Do you guys agree with me that if FF7 were to come out today, they would have been DLC?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. See, I don't know.
So
Yuffie, yes. Vincent, I feel like he shouldn't have been an optional character.
No,
his
story, I realize
was
that now.
So
yeah, he
intertwined
shouldn't have
with everything. He should have been
yeah.
right off the bat.
Right.
Unmissable.
Vincent's origin story, you know, he was with the Genova Project, with Lucrezia. A lot of people actually theorize, there's a popular theory that's never been confirmed, that Hojo is not Sephiroth's father, that it's actually Vincent is Sephiroth's father.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which I'm tempted to believe. My friend Joe actually like swears by this this theory. When Dirge of Cerberus came out, which is the Vincent spinoff game, he didn't play it. I did, and he asked me like right off the bat, he's like, was there anything about him being Sephiroth's father? I'm like, no. Nope.
Yeah, I mean, it could. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure with the right explanation, it could sound logical. Mm-hmm. But just about anything could sound logical with the right explanation in this story.
Yeah, well, let's look at Vincent, though. He's got awesome transformation limit breaks, which are just so much fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Even though,
fun.
You know, he's one of two characters that uses a gun, except it's not grafted to his arm like with Barrett. And the coolest thing about him, if he wasn't cool enough already with like all like the dark brooding persona,
mm-hmm.
he's a Turk.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the other part that was really shocking once you find that out.
Yeah. Oh my God. You find it out right from Jump Street though. Like the second you meet him, he was like, I'm from the Turks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was because the whole time the Turks were sort of the other thorn in your side,
right.
You know, the more comical thorn in your side, in my opinion.
Yeah, much like Team Rocket and Pokemon.
Right, exactly. just can't really get out of their own way, and but then eventually
once one of them
joins your team, it's just wow. Okay,
I've
all right.
Never thought of
these
the
guys
Turks.
Are legit.
I've never thought of the Turks as Team Rocket before.
Oh, absolutely.
That's really funny.
Especially when you get to Yuffie and you play through that whole storyline
in Wutai,
you come across them in Wutai, and they're just like, drinking. We're on vacation. Don't even worry about it. Just go ahead, guys.
We don't even take ourselves seriously.
They just brought us drinks in coconuts with little umbrellas. We are not getting into a fight right now. Turn around. Elena's like, come on! And Rito's just like, sit down.
Enough.
Freaking rookies, sit down. And I love, even at the very end with the Turks, you have the option to not fight them.
Right, yeah. That's
like, true. You run into the Turks in that sewer, and again, Elena's like, come on!
Yep.
And Reno's like, ugh.
Do we have to do this again?
And Root is like, dot, 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 dot. Mm-hmm. You know, because Root is the soft-spoken one. Right. I think that the Turks were never intended to be as popular as they became.
Yeah.
It was one of those happy accidents. Because, like, if you look at how involved the Turks are in at the movie, Advent Children.
Right, right, right.
And it was funny. There's a lot of fan fiction out there. And in that fan fiction, the Turks are usually, like, any fan fiction that I had ever read about, like, what happens after the game, they always have the Turks becoming good guys. Always.
Really?
Everyone I read. And then Advent Children, the Turks were good guys.
Yeah, absolutely. They were a big part of Advent Children. Awesome. I loved them in that.
Oh, they're so cool. I love Reno and Rude. And I like, you know, Elena, I wish she was in Advent Children more because I liked her in the game itself. The last time we played, actually, Jackie was playing the Icicle Inn area. Mm-hmm. And
with the super cool snowboarding.
Yeah, but when Elena comes and punches, and I'm like, you got to move. You got to move. And Elena's like, here it comes. And I'm like, you got to move. And she just gloriously doesn't move. And so Elena just knocks Cloud out. And I was like, I've never seen that happen before.
Didn't think that was possible. I thought she would just reel
back
forever.
That was the intention. Totally. Totally.
Yeah, you just wanted to see it happen. That's
was
all.
This a girl power thing? Like, you
Yeah. You have to give her her moment. Come on.
Please. She's enough of a girl to get your girl power fix anyway.
She knocks him out with one punch. It's just like,
right,
and you're
right.
Just left there thinking, "How Sephiroth, did that happen?"
Note. You figure that's how it's done,
but you figure Shinra would finish him off.
Nah, they don't care.
They throw him into Professor Gas' house in Icicle Inn, and he just wakes up like, "Oh, anyone get the number of that truck?"
Jeez, well, I better continue saving the world now.
Yeah, that was how long was I out?
Well, they're like those villains that go on in their little monologue and don't realize that they have the potential to just get rid of their thorn on their side.
And how can it be like? Yeah. And she's like back at like Shinra HQ, and she's like, "I saw Cloud, and I knocked him out with one punch." And they're like, "Oh, that's great, Elena. So then you snapped his neck, right? Like you killed him." What? What?
I'm sorry. What? Excuse me.
You said you knocked him out. He was incapacitated. He was vulnerable. You didn't finish him off. No. Oh, wait, we've been trying to kill this guy the entire game. You knocked him out.
Reminds me of a little Dr. Evil, Scott Evil action there.
Exactly. I've got a gun in my room. We'll shoot him together.
Why don't you just go back in time and kill him when he's on the crapper?
What, are you feeding them now?
So let's transition with the Turks over to Shinra itself. Shinra is a phenomenal villain organization.
Oh, absolutely.
I love the characters in Shinra.
Yeah, and that's exactly it, that once you take characters, because on the whole, they're, you know, random evil corporation trying to take over the world.
Right.
But you really get into each individual...
They're not
individual...
even trying. They control the world.
Oh, yeah, they control
the
world.
They have
their
own army. They,
you know. Each individual player in that chess game there is very important.
Yes.
And they all are different, and almost all of them have a different kind of... focus, I guess.
Let's talk about. Let's go by one by one. Head of space program, Palmer. We have to start with Palmer. I love Palmer.
That is a very good mix of comic relief and actual villainry.
Yes,
he's a very good character,
and he takes lard in his tea. Apparently,
of course,
that's the way to do it.
Is that frowned upon?
One of my favorite boss fights in the game is Palmer.
Oh, absolutely,
it was easy.
Oh, mm-hmm. Simple.
Wasn't like
simple.
Demon's Gate or like that crap. Oh, we'll get there. We're gonna talk
Demon's
about possible bosses later.
I love Demon's Gate.
Yeah, that fight was a total ego boost. Like,
yeah, Palmer is just like, here you go. You.
You've come this far. You deserve a break.
Listen, you're about to go to Temple of the Ancients, so we're gonna let you
throw you a little bone.
We're gonna let you beat up a fat guy in a brown suit for a little while,
right?
Yeah, but Palmer was always great comic relief and Shinra needed that. It needed some comic relief in there because the rest of the characters are so like intense,
heavy.
Right?
Yeah. Scarlet. The head of weapons development.
Scarlet legitimately scared me.
Yes.
I thought that she was going to really just be an incredibly difficult boss at one point.
Well, Proud Clawed, you know, if you don't have Knights of the Round, the Proud Clawed is...
Proud Clawed was just disgusting. And that's basically kind of exactly what I expected out of her, was that eventually she's going to pull out the artillery and
they're Megazord.
Going down.
Yeah, they got their, like, weapon-fighting Megazord.
Yeah, props to Scarlet, by the way, climbing all this shit in those red pumps.
Yes!
Yeah, right?
Which she chases Tifa through the Drunon.
damn, girl. Damn. <We're laughs> Got me beat on that. I can't even go down a couple of flights of stairs without tripping on my ass.
Oh, yeah.
we were playing last time, and I never thought of it before, and Jackie just goes to me. She's like, she's climbing down the side of the city in a dress.
In an evening gown and heels. Yeah.
She deserved to win that slap fight with Tifa.
Oh, absolutely.
That's, I think, Scarlett's like big moment. She has two big moments, I think, when she has the slap fight with Tifa, which hopefully Tifa usually wins, because there's no reason on earth that this skill... Well, first of all, why is Tifa even having a slap fight?
Yeah, she's all fists.
Yeah,
she just knocked her right out.
Right, she's like one of the... She decides to open hand and slap her right across the cheek.
Too girly.
Yeah,
boo.
She is one of the most skilled martial artists on the planet.
That's right.
And this woman in the side slit dress and heels comes up to her. She should have had a roundhouse kick to the face waiting for her.
Oh, yeah.
And it would have been done instantaneously.
Yep. Instead, they call each other stuck-up bitches and slap each other in the face repeatedly.
Right.
It was pretty much just tit for tat. That's all.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. Oh, Scarlett's other big moment is the fact that she is the one that wrecks Barrett's arm that needs the... when Barrett and Dine...
Scarlett destroys both of their arms.
Yeah. Okay, moving on.
So thanks, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. Let's move on to Reeve, Kate Sith himself.
Yeah.
Reeve, the
Reeve
in wrestling vernacular would be called the babyface of Shinra.
Right.
And that he is the lone good guy, the one with the conscience. You know, Reeve, kind of a little dry. He is Kate Sith, so he is a major player in the game.
And that point flew over my head completely for the first two playthroughs, even though it was
clear, spelled right out that it was
Reeve controlling him the entire time. I had no clue. And I also had no idea that it was actually a little cat on top of there.
Well, right, yeah, it was
just a big marshmallow suit.
Yeah, you thought it was the Moogle talking.
Right.
I like that character.
Kate Sith?
Yeah, I mean, not my favorite, but...
So you're the only one that likes
Kate. I was just about to say, once we get into our favorite party combination discussion...
I think aesthetically, because I love cats, but beyond that, when I found out that he was a little spy, I'm like, that little turd.
Yeah, when he kidnaps Marlene, takes the keystone.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, the thing with Kate Sith, I've never met anyone who uses Kate Sith on a regular basis.
Yeah, no. I think mostly because the limit was just very underwhelming and very... random. I mean, clearly, it's a slot game, so you can't really, you know, be perfect at it. But
also,
a little underwhelming.
He's a very important character to the story.
Yeah,
but he's just lame.
Right. Not as a fighter.
Right.
Integral to the storyline. But I remember just trying to include him in the fights because I have this OCD about everybody being about on par with their levels.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because the first time I was playing, I didn't know if I would just be left with him or something and I would have to depend on him and then I would be screwed.
I went the opposite way on that one. My first playthrough ever, I remember using the same party over and over and over again.
Same.
And then once you get to the Sephiroth fight where you need 6 party members total... I had nobody there.
You never actually need to switch.
Yeah,
right?
I know, but that's the canon of the game. I wanted to play it how it was intended.
Well, here's the thing. With Kate Sith is there were 2 times in the game where I used him, and I think everybody has to use him these 2 times. You get to Corel Prison up until you can get to a save point and get him the fudge out of your group,
right?
And in Junon, when you're saving Tifa, when your party is Barrett, Kate Sith, and Yuffie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Those are the only 2 times anyone ever used them.
Because they were the only 2 times that you
had to.
You could not avoid it.
Yeah. Moving on in Shinra, Heidegger, who I used to always say Hedger when I was a kid.
That was a weird name. German, I guess.
But you know what? I never thought of it, I always
equated him as a German, you know, general.
I always equated him as a Russian, just because the way he looked.
Yeah. I thought the same thing, actually. He's Mr. Wah-ha-ha-ha, right?
Yeah.
That was his line.
Like, I always saw him as more of like a, yes, Mr. President, we have tracked the avalanche. And, like, you know, I always saw that.
Okay, yeah.
As opposed to being like, yeah, we found him in the hiding on the ship, and the Sephiroth was here. Yeah.
Wah-ha-ha-ha-ha.
Yeah, my Presidente.
Equal opportunity offender. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Well, I figure if I already offended the Japanese, I might as well just go through the entire East.
Don't discriminate on discriminating.
I go full way. Can't be half pregnant.
All right. So now, Hojo. Hojo is by far my favorite villain in Shinra.
Yeah, Hojo is complicated.
Hojo is the epitome of evil in this game.
Yes.
He has absolutely no bones about torturing, dissecting living being, like living, thinking, feeling human beings.
Right, right.
Has absolutely no bones about, there's no moral compass in Hojo. Everything is for science.
And is anyone else kind of a little weirded out that he was trying to mate interspecies?
Yeah, when Eris and Red were together, right?
Yeah, that was... originally, I thought, oh, man,
sick.
He's trying to get Red to kill Eris. That's terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah, looking back on that, no, I don't think that's what's about to happen.
No.
I'm pretty sure there was some other demented things going on.
Yeah, definitely. And she pointed that out to me, actually, in this one. And I guess in my innocent mind, like, I never thought that, like, he's trying to have them bang.
Oh, yeah.
And, like... I never thought about it.
Yeah, they were getting nasty in there.
Holy crap!
Mm-hmm.
Really
in the name of science,
especially with all the smoke in there. You know, it was hard to see. You know, trying to set the mood.
This is a guy that took dangerous experimental alien blood and injected it into the fetus of his unborn child.
Right. Yeah.
And that's, then
a little over the top.
Lucrezia says she never even got to hold Sephiroth once. So he was born, and Hojo just took him.
Right. Yeah. He was born as an experiment from start one.
It takes a sick mind to do something like that.
I literally envision, like, he's born, he's crying, she's reaching out for him, and Hojo just takes the baby and walks out of the room.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And immediately down to the laboratory, hooking it up
experiment
to
machines. Experiment number whatever.
Yep.
Yep, that's all it was.
And it just happens to be the experiment that succeeds.
Right.
Well, based on what you think.
Well, but yeah, succeeds is a relative term.
Do you think that there is some... like there might be a little bit of fatherly love in Hojo for Sephiroth?
I don't know if you would call it love. Attachment, definitely.
Well, because, you know, he at the end, towards the end, when you do the return to Midgar, Hojo is sabotaging the sister cannon so that it will destroy Midgar.
Right.
So that Sephiroth will have even more of that energy, that life energy to drain up.
Right.
Basically, he's helping his son. Do you think that's because I'm helping you because you're my son? Or is it I'm helping you to prove that my experiment was right?
It's the latter, definitely.
I would
that
call
guy
it a little bit
of
column A
that.
And a lot of column B.
Yeah, and you know what? With Hojo, I was always disappointed. So I was like, oh, you should be able to fight this guy. I mean, like, you should just be able to punch him in the face and he'll crack. Then when he says, I've injected myself with Genova cells, I was like, yeah! Because, like, it was time. So time. And then, spoiler alert, if you haven't played Dirge of Cerberus, which I know neither of you have.
Right.
But I'm just going to spoil the crap out of it for you right now.
All right, go ahead, spoil away.
When Vincent gets to the main villain, this guy Vice... Vice is talking to him like he knows him. And he's like, oh, so who we meet again? And Vincent's like, I don't know you. And he says, Vice, in his voice, he's just like, 3 years ago, while I was still running around looking for Sephiroth, and like he's talking, and Vincent's just like, what? And he's like, you know, I downloaded my mind into the worldwide network until it came together. He's like, it's a Neo reunion. And Vincent just goes,
oh.
You.
You. Boy.
And then you hear Hojo's voice go, and then Vice says, it's me, Hojo. And you see, like, this hologram of Hojo next to him because Hojo is in Vice's body.
Wow.
And now it's a Hojo that can kick serious ass, too, because then you fight Vice or Hojo in Vice's body, and he whoops the crap out of you.
Wow.
And then you have to literally, Vincent, like, draws on chaos while, gets chaos's power, which is his final limit break, while still maintaining his human form, and that's the only way he's able to beat him. It's a really, really cool moment. It's like my favorite cutscene. I watched that cutscene over and over again, both in English and Japanese, because they both, in English and Japanese, they nail Hojo's voice.
Any differences, though, between the two versions?
Big difference. Well, he sounds completely different. It's what a Japanese geek sounds like versus what, like, an American geek would sound like.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think that whenever it's available, I always love to watch the Japanese cutscenes with English subtitles just so I know what's going on. Over the English cutscenes.
The way
just
it was because, meant to be.
Yeah, because right. the voice acting in Japan is just, it's phenomenal. They really know what they're doing.
Yeah, and sometimes the Americans will get the voices wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
With the FF7 cast, they pretty much got it right. I mean, Kate Sith was Scottish for some reason, but...
Yeah, it was a little weird.
Other than that,
Other than that, everything was pretty much as I expected it. You know?
But when I saw that Hojo was the main antagonist of that game, and you don't know it until the end of the game.
Yeah.
You just think you're chasing these guys from Deep Ground, which is like this organization which developed super soldiers, and you find out that the leader of Deep Ground is actually Hojo.
And this all takes place after Final Fantasy VII, right?
Yes,
or kind of during?
3 years. It's like a year and a half after Advent Children.
Okay.
And you find out like so many cool things just about Vincent and Hojo and Sephiroth and Lucrezia. Like that's, you get that whole backstory. So if you haven't played it, folks, I highly recommend checking it out. Okay, so now the heads of Shinra Incorporated. We have President Shinra, who really was kind of your typical cliche corporate villain.
Right.
I would say. But then we get Rufus.
Then Rufus.
Rufus. Yeah. I love Rufus. Outside of Hojo, Rufus is probably my favorite.
That absolutely. Guy is style all the way. You remember those banners?
Yes. Absolutely.
Just covered Junon in his name.
Mm-hmm. Rufus knew how to get things done. He's a very good figurehead.
Always,
a very good company head.
Always with that little flick of his hair.
Oh yeah.
Well, when you do that boss fight where you just fight him as Cloud, I thought that was awesome.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right outside. Outside.
You're on top. Yeah, you're on top of the Shinra building.
That was a really cool fight. It was relatively easy enough to get through, but it should be because Rufus shouldn't necessarily be a fighter.
I agree.
He's more the company leader.
But in Advent Children, again, spoilers if you haven't seen Advent Children, when Rufus gets out of that wheelchair and rips that cloak off and then jumps off the building shooting at Genova's head, I mean, like, again, Rufus turns into a good guy in the follow-ups.
And pretty much everyone sort of has to once they realize what devastation Genova is actually bringing.
Right.
You kind of all have to band together at some point.
Yeah.
The enemy of my enemy kind of thing.
Right. Now, moving on from Shinra, I wanted to ask you guys this. In a post 9/11 world, Avalanche, are they terrorists?
I would say so.
It's a question I've heard raised from a lot of people.
Yeah.
I would say so. They're eco-terrorists. They're listed that way. And when you think about it, they're not like your typical picketers, protesting with signs and whatnot. They're blowing shit up.
They're blowing.
Yeah. They're actually killing a lot of people.
Yeah,
they make the point a couple times in the game. They make the point that when they blow up the number one and number five Mako reactors, innocent people were killed.
Oh yeah, tons of innocent people. Anyone under them?
Yeah,
thousands and thousands of people.
Innocent
killed.
Workers.
Yeah, their main mission is very admirable, but the way they go about it.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of screams terrorist.
You can definitely make the argument that they're absolutely terrorists because all they're doing is blowing things up and killing more people. Yeah,
but
I feel like for the greater good. But who knows?
I feel like after they bring down the Sector 7 plate, after Shinra brings down the destroy Sector 7 to get at them, I feel like Avalanche's tactics change, and I feel like Barrett, as the game goes on, even shows some growth and some regret for what he did.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about it.
The fight was pretty much brought to their home base. So.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I think they may have been just, in a little bit over their heads. And once they realized that, they kind of, pumped the brakes a little bit and realized, hey, what we're doing is not the right way to do it. So let's go at this a different way.
And now I think the last, before we move on to the actual gameplay, I think the last relationship in the game we really need to discuss is Cloud and Sephiroth.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to say Cloud and Aeris.
That's what I thought. Well, but
we can also discuss that with this as well. I mean,
intense.
Okay, well, what do you guys go for? Do you go Cloud and Aeris or Cloud and Tifa?
Oh, man.
That's tough.
It
really
is
tough because you can see them with both,
Claris or Cleafa.
Ah.
I mean, I was always a Claris guy, I guess. And Tifa was sort of, I don't know, that third wheel that just kind of, all right, you're here. Why not?
Back up.
But, I mean, an argument could be, do you think he ever actually, like Tifa is still just his friend in the end.
Exactly.
Like, there's never a romantic. Like, he loved Aeris, I think, and Aeris is killed. Which, by the way, they spoil in the freaking commercial for the game.
Yeah.
What is that about?
Yeah.
Such a poignant moment in the entire thing.
Yeah, and it's the main focus of every marketing campaign that they've had.
Yeah.
And by the way, just cutting away a little bit, what was the most shocking moment for you in the entire game?
Shocking moment?
Yeah. The one that really, pulled at your heartstrings a little bit.
When they brought the Sector 7 plate down.
That was it?
That's the clear, the obvious answer is Aeris' death. But
well, I knew that was going to happen.
But everyone knew it was going to happen. I was still shocked at how it happened. and a little confused because, again, first RPG, yep. You know, my party members, quote unquote, died almost every battle, you know, but then, you know,
just going, give her a going, Phoenix down.
Going a little further, you realize that, you know, your party members don't actually die. They just faint, you know, yeah. So they're mm-hmm. not dead. They're just out for a little while. And yeah. And it's hard to come back from a sword directly through your heart.
Yes.
You know, but I was always sitting there thinking, you know, all right, she'll be back. Just, you know, get her a Phoenix down or something. And she's exactly. all set. She never up. Did. And that was walk a little off, confusing bitch. To the newbie in the RPG era.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean that had to be the most shocking for me. That and once I saw Sephiroth in the Northern Crater.
Yes.
Once I see him, you know, in encompassed in that crystal, you know, in that meteor, it was just,
wait a minute, we just saw you out there. Say, when did you have the time to get in here, take off all your clothes and get in that crystal?
Oh yeah, that scene there was just kind of it just blew me away.
I gotta say, the moment that actually choked me up, besides Eris's death, because I really wanted her to be with Cloud.
Was it the birth of your gold chocobo?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. Don't
tear to your eyes. No, seriously.
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead.
No, it was actually on Cosmo Canyon when Red discovers what happened with his father.
Yes. Oh, that moment.
Because he thought his father was a coward.
Right.
And just, you know, ran off. He died protecting Cosmo Canyon.
You can see the goosebumps. You can't.
That part really got to me.
Yeah, and especially when the tear dropped down out of the statue's eye. Oh, my God.
So sad.
Done.
And he's howling at the moon.
Wept mm-hmm. like a little girl.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I'm getting, like, emotional just talking about it. That's, like, the one moment I think... Like, and Red, not my favorite character, not a character I ever really utilized.
How dare you?
Yeah, how dare you?
I know. We'll get to our favorite characters. But yeah, that was a good question. I think that moment really, to a lot of... And you know, first playthrough, I didn't even see that because I couldn't beat G.I. and Attack.
Yep.
So I ended up giving my memory card to a friend and I was like,
oh,
beat this
no.
for me.
Oh,
and God, I was in seventh grade.
But, you know, it was years later
you
that
had
I actually
someone
saw
do your
it.
Homework for yeah. you.
Well, what you know, on this last playthrough, let me tell you something. I sent a reverberating shock back through the space-time continuum, my seventh grade self, because we didn't figure this out. G.I. and Attack is an undead.
Right.
And I said to Jackie this time when we were playing, I'm like, throw a phoenix down
what
at him.
What happens if you throw a phoenix down? Or an elixir? Or a high potion at least? Throw, anything.
So throw a phoenix down at him. Shows the phoenix down. I do one physical attack as Cloud.
Peace.
I'm like, you're kidding me.
Yep.
I spent months on this boss.
That's why I was very confused as to why you had to give that to a friend. I just, you know.
The Japanese are huge proponents of common sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so Cloud and Sephiroth, two halves of one whole, I would say.
Right.
You
maybe
know,
like three quarters and a quarter.
I think, you know, Cloud thinks he hates Sephiroth because of Nibelheim, but in actuality, he's just enamored with Sephiroth because he's being summoned by him.
Right.
Until Eris's death, I feel that's the turning point.
Oh yeah, that's it.
That's the point where it's like, okay, now it's on. I mean, listen, he does still kill Cloud's family, and like. They almost like turn it into a thing where you don't think that like this big Cloud Sephiroth rivalry actually existed, but then when they go back and show you what actually happened in Nibelheim, you see it does, and there's a reason Sephiroth is so like intimidated almost by Cloud, because this lowly grunt foot soldier, he impales him, and then you know he's got Cloud impaled on his sword. And he meant, because listen, when he sneak attacks him, I think Sephiroth's just like, ah, stupid.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, but when he impales Cloud and Cloud lifts him up, and like, I'm getting goosebumps sick out of this too. When Cloud lifts him up and throws him into the life stream.
Yeah.
That's got to be the moment where it's like, what just happened here? And that's Cloud before any Genova was ever put in him. So anyone that makes the argument that Cloud is only special because he's got Genova in him, Cloud was special before that because Cloud defeats Sephiroth when he's just a mortal human.
Right. And
that's a really good point.
An argument can be made that he's even more special because after Genova was in him, it did not adversely affect him, you know, to near death. You know, he wasn't, you know...
At first. And then he walks it off.
Through all that.
I mean...
And he still continued on.
Yeah, I mean, because he's not one of those, like, black-hooded, like, oh, back
exactly.
to Sephiroth.
But, he like, was definitely shaken and,
yeah,
you know, out of
well,
it for
his,
a while. Well,
his mind was shattered into pieces, and that's why he thought he was Zack.
Right, right.
you know, by the time, like, he takes the sword.
Oh, that whole thing confused me as well.
Oh, my God,
so
yeah.
Much.
Well, so
much
recently I had to get that squared away.
You got
to
play Crisis Core.
Yeah,
PSP
that's
game.
What I keep hearing, is a Crisis Core is the big explainer of everything.
Yeah, like, because he still knows who Zack is when he takes the Buster Sword. But by the time he hits Midgar, his mind is like, because he's just waking up from being out of it from the Genova when he takes the sword from Zack. So he's still kind of there. And it's almost like a regressive autism, because it's like he's still there and he's still himself when he first wakes up. But then by the time he hits Midgar, he's convinced himself that he's Zack.
Hmm. Wow. So during the whole time, during the whole scene, I guess, you know, he thought that he was Zack throughout that whole process, or he's just remembering it as he was Zack in this?
He thinks that everything that happened to Zack happened to him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because Zack gives him the sword while he's dying. He tells Cloud that he says, you need to go on and you'll be my living legacy. And the last thing you see in Crisis Core is Cloud can't lift the Buster Sword. He's dragging it behind him.
Well, yeah, it's enormous.
On the way to Midgar. And then the credits roll, and the very last thing you see is Cloud with the Buster Sword on his back on the train heading into the number one reactor, and he says, I'm Cloud, Soldier First Class.
Nice.
Because between the point where Tifa finds him in the train station, from when he first got the Buster Sword from Zack, his mind just started piecing itself back together, and he thought he was Zack.
He was so sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the real tragedy of Cloud, is that he had this huge heroic moment.
Right.
And he doesn't even remember it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, he remembers a completely different moment.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Until Tifa puts the pieces of his memory back together.
She was there. Right.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into the actual gameplay here. And that is the extras. First of all, there was a lot of extra things to do in this game. It was the first game I ever played where it was like, you could travel off the beaten path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And go do other things. So the first thing I want to talk about, weapon.
Weapon as in your weapons, or weapon as in
no,
Ultima,
as in
Emerald,
the
right?
weapons
Ruby.
That the planet produces to
right.
to
right.
stop Genova. Because that's what they are. They're there to stop Genova, but they can't get to Genova, so they just start wiping everything out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Has anyone at this table ever actually beaten Ruby or Emerald weapon?
Yes.
No.
You have.
I have indeed.
Wow.
Get out of town.
It's cheapened because I kind of did the easy way out, you know, level 99s, and you have the you know, mime with Knights of the Round and underwater materia, and it's
cheap about that. That's strategy.
You
use
that.
I mean,
otherwise,
you really do. I mean, there are people they say legitimately, which,
yeah.
you know, either way, I guess is legitimate. You're not really cheating. It's
not like Knights of the Round is a cheat code. It's,
no.
You have to work for that.
It's a very easy way out. It's a lot easier than without it. So,
right.
But yeah, I have, and it was glorious.
Emerald or Ruby?
Both.
Both?
Both.
Both. Give this man an award.
Both one time.
You are my hero.
Yeah, it's
Holy
nice
cow.
Having two golden chocobos roaming around.
Oh, okay, so you got the one golden chocobo from...
From breeding,
and then you got the other one from beating Ruby.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
From beating Ruby, you get a golden chocobo.
That's incredible.
Which at that point, it's like, you know, you've already done everything in the game, and it's like, why do you not have a golden chocobo yet?
I mean, listen, at the end of the day, I always fight Ultimate Weapon.
Right.
And who doesn't?
You have to fight Diamond Weapon.
I've tried to fight Emerald and Ruby before, and it just ends in miserable
God,
failure.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, she'll tell you, like, when I'm piloting the submarine, I'm like, where is it? Where is it?
Yeah.
It just disappeared. Where did it go?
It was here, and now it's not here. So where's it going to be? I'm so terrified.
Surface, please!
I'm so terrified that Emerald Weapon is just going to swoop in and just destroy me.
It's your third grade bully.
Exactly. So that's impressive that you did that.
That really is.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really take full credit because I would sit and you know, kind of watch YouTube videos on it and see what the best strategies were, you know,
right.
see what other people have done and just try to duplicate as best as you can. And it's, you know, being a turn-based RPG, it's a little bit easier. So, you know, you have a minute.
Right.
If you choose the option to the wait comment, you know, instead of the active limit.
Doesn't Ruby kill two of your party members immediately?
It just removes them from battle, but
yeah,
you can get around
that
by going into that fight with them both dead. So as soon as, if they're both dead once you're in the fight, he doesn't remove anybody, and then you just revive them, and there you go.
Oh,
you're
on your way.
Sneaky.
Hey, going along with that, do you just use Phoenix Downs, or do you actually have the revive materium?
I have, for both of those, I feel it's a must to have both Final Attack materia and Phoenix. combined, so that basically every time that you die, you get a full 100% party revival.
That's interesting. I've never
and
even...
it's it you know well, at least five times anyway.
Yeah.
And then you're on your way on there. That's my clutch pairing right there. But it's insanely difficult. Not difficult. Insanely time consuming to build up final attack to master. It's very tough to do.
Speaking of mastering materia, I got to tell you about a funny Final Fantasy practical joke that was played on my friend Joe when we were in high school. There was a group of us that loved FF7. My friend Joe was obsessed with Sephiroth, just loved Sephiroth immensely, and to the point where he was growing his hair long so that it can reach down past his butt, so he can dye it silver. Thankfully,
that's a little much.
Thankfully,
that
it never,
is dedication.
Thankfully,
right there,
it never came to that. But anyway, so our friend Redmond says to him, "Oh, you know, there's a way to get Supernova in the game."
Oh, come on!
And he's like, "How? How do you get Supernova?" And he's just like, "You have to get every materia in the game. You have to master every materia in the game."
Oh, that is just mean.
And then once every all materia, everything, and then you got to go back to Priscilla, the little girl in Junon, and talk to her, and she gives you like her family pendant, which is Supernova.
Wow.
So he does it, dude, and it takes him months. Months of like backbreaking, just leveling up. And finally, there's like this moment, and you know, like people are there watching him. I wasn't there for this, but I've heard the story many times. So he triumphantly walks up the stairs to Priscilla.
Oh no!
Bursts into the room, talks to her, waiting for it, and she just goes, "Cloud, when I grow up, I'm gonna marry you." And he's just silent for a second. He goes, "Redmond, I'm not seeing Supernova."
How livid was he?
"I'm not seeing Supernova, Redmond." The greatest moment of all time.
This is what I don't miss about not having internet.
Awesome. Yes, because you could just check that.
I could just say, I don't think so, man.
No, this was back in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah,
so
this is
you believed what your friends
said. GameFAQs.com and waiting for, you know, 25 minutes for the page to load.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah, I used to do that. Okay, so the biggest extra of them all in this game is the chocobo breeding.
Yes, indeed.
And I think it's definitely the most time-consuming thing you could possibly do in this game.
Without a doubt. There's a nice way to go about it that helps. You know, if you know kind of what you're doing, what you're looking for, you know really how to maximize your time. But it's incredibly time consuming.
It is a matter of chance too. Like when you find the tracks, you're just circling and circling and circling and waiting for that.
Yep,
you know,
you gotta throw your encounter plus material up, your preemptive
and then everything is on. Finally, when you get to the chocobo, if it's not the combination that you need, you're like,
that for naught. Yep.
You know? Mm-hmm. And nothing beats when you finally have the chocobo that you need and you need to catch him. You've been working at it for 2 hours and you accidentally cast some kind of a fireball. And you accidentally just brush against it, you know, the wrong way.
And it freaks out.
Work, right?
Work, peck, 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 kick, kick, kick.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
What I like to do is when I first get the chocobo lure, like at the Chocobo Farm, and I didn't do this the last time we played because I forgot to do it. I leave it equipped on somebody. That way, by the time you get to that time period, it's already leveled up.
So it's easier for
you to find Chocobo. Because if you're like a level one with that, it's like impossible to find Chocobos.
It's terrible.
Once you level it up, it becomes more and more easy to find them. I start catching Chocobos as Tifa. Once Cloud's gone.
Okay.
So that way I have as many as you could get by the time Cloud comes back.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I was like, you know what, I can feasibly just get Knights of the Round now as Tifa and, you know, just play it like that. But you can't, because you can't race in the Gold Saucer until Cloud comes back.
Exactly, mm-hmm.
Because Gold Saucer's closed for a while. That being said, the Gold Saucer races can actually be really fun unless you get that frickin' T.O. in your race.
Oh my god, T.O. I swear I got him in every single one for a while. I'm like, why this one? And it was the
there's a
the
B-class, too. It's like,
race.
You're not supposed to be in
the
A-class.
Yeah, he
was
get
in the B-class
out of here.
Then, just to piss you off.
Yeah, everybody else was like 89, 85, and all of a sudden 115. What are you doing here?
No matter how good you are, he is always a little bit better.
Just a little bit better. You got to be on your game to beat him.
But I've beaten him.
You have beaten him.
Yeah, he's beatable.
Totally.
He's beatable. It's, he's definitely beatable. It's just
you're
a
in
pain.
For a fight, though. Mm-hmm. It's not like normally I like to level my chocobos up with enough chocobo sage greens to be able to just woof. Like,
and you just have to maximize basically, your sprints. Yeah, well,
exactly. You sprint the first half of the level, you put the controller down, you've won eventually. Yeah. You just let it go.
Unless Tio's
Unless
there.
Unless Tio's
yes.
there. And then you're screwed. You're
fighting the whole way through, yeah. That is pretty tense.
But you know what? Like, when you get like the gold chocobo, like when if you ever. A lot of people don't even race their gold chocobo just because.
Oh, I do. Just because at that point, why not? You might as well.
Oh, because you don't even need to give it greens. It's
just.
You have the king of chocobos anything. Right there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, actually, in Final Fantasy IX, the gold chocobo could even fly.
Really?
It becomes like a second airship.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. How many times did Cid ride your chocobo in the chocobo races?
A lot, actually.
Yeah, like.
Constantly.
That's the thing I love. Like, if you're there with Tifa or Cid, occasionally they'll pop out and be like, how about I get on this?
Yeah.
And,
you know, like, I let them every time.
Yep.
Every
and
time.
And they'll also do that with the snowboarding game.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, because if the code is in the game for them to ride the snowboard and for them to ride a chocobo. Because,
just Cid and Tifa again?
Yeah, because they're party leaders at a certain point in the game. So if you went to Icicle Inn as Cid and went down the thing, you would do the snowboarding.
Right,
as Cid.
That makes sense.
So it's there, so they figured might as well use it.
That's cool.
For some reason, I always feel like Cid is better at riding the chocobos and the snowboard than Cloud.
Well, yeah, I mean, his code is clearly written better.
Yes,
that's not factual at all.
Even though it's exactly the same thing, I just feel like he must be better. So chocobo breeding, you know, nothing worse than like, okay, I got my mountain. I'm trying to get my river. Oh, I got another mountain.
Yep.
Or you get the river, and it's like your mountain is a boy, and it's like it's, you get the river, and it's like now give chocobo male a name.
Yeah.
No!
Oh, yeah.
You throw the controller. You're like, damn you, chocobos!
Yeah. That's where it helps to save. Reload, save, reload, save, reload.
Always save right outside the chocobo farm.
Apparently, it's different if you shut the game completely off as to if you do the soft reset where you hold the left trigger, right trigger, and the select and start. You get a different coding of encounters.
Huh.
So if you're not getting the right encounter, if you turn the game all the way off, turn it all the way back on, you'll get the same exact encounter that you left off with.
That's interesting.
If you do the soft reset, it's different. You're gonna basically keep the encounter that you already had as, data, and it's going to continue on to
that
the next
sense.
Stream of data.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it's one
that.
Of those little kind
of I don't know. Well,
tips.
See, we play now on the PS3, because you can play PS1.
Same thing. Doesn't matter. Okay. Yeah, the PS3 has the same soft reset on there, and it's just basically its code. It's how the code works.
Okay, so let's say let's talk about our party, our individual parties that we like to go into battle with. Like everyone, even if you switch it up like Jackie does to obsessively get everybody at the same level.
That's right.
You still have those three that they're your three. This is my party.
Yeah.
TJ, what do you got?
I have Cloud, clearly.
Yeah.
He kinda has to. Red.
Here
and
in mind.
Yuffie.
That's right.
Red.
Whoa!
Yuffie.
All
Yuffie
right.
is my classic go to. I love to put her in the group, throw her on the back line, and just pelt away because she has that long range weapon.
Right.
She takes a lot less damage, and you can do a lot more things with her because of that. You don't have to waste, a lot of things on armor and any kind of. You don't have to worry about putting too much materia on her.
Right.
You're just shrinking her HP down. You're kind of free to do a lot more things.
Right. That's interesting.
That's probably my top three, but it's tough because this game has so many characters that I want to use.
Right.
Like, I want to have a use for Tifa. I want to use Barrett constantly.
Right. And after Cloud's, after Cloud's coma, it's like, I feel bad not using Tifa now. She just did all this crap for me.
Exactly.
Now I'm going to make her go sit on the ship?
Yeah. Like, and it stinks that you're limited to three when there's so many good characters with different styles of play that I just love.
That's why I love what Final Fantasy X did, because you can literally change your party mid-battle.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah. That's nice.
That is a huge perk.
Because you're never without your other party members. Like, they're always all together as a group.
Yeah.
So it's literally like you could swap them out.
They're just waiting in the wings.
Yep.
Yeah,
10 is the only one that I actually haven't played yet, which is just
an atrocity. They're doing an HD re-release this month.
Yes,
so.
I have heard about that.
I actually think it's coming out this week or next week. 10 and 10-2. Don't bother with 10-2.
Yeah, I heard 10-2 is just,
But we're not talking about Final Fantasy 10 right now. We're talking about Final Fantasy 7.
Another day.
Jackie, your ideal party.
Okay, well, before Aeris died, I liked having her in the group. Cloud, Aeris is a healer, and I would usually have either Tifa or Barrett.
Okay.
That was in the beginning. Then after Aeris dies, it's different. Then I have Red, because I like to keep him in the party at some points, leveling him up. I keep him in the party because he's pretty balanced.
Yeah,
you know,
really
he's good
is.
As a fighter and as a healer. So I have him do, you know, the healer part mostly, and Cloud, and usually Tifa. I keep Tifa in there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm a little bit shocked, and I mean, without question, I know your top three would be Cloud, Vincent, and Vincent. If possible.
Yeah, right.
If possible,
just all Vincent, really.
Let's yeah, if I could get rid of Cloud, it would be great.
Now, most recently, when I played with him, we got Vincent. And I got to say...
Painstakingly, because it took forever to beat Lost Number.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got to say, I wish I had gotten Vincent the first player.
Yeah.
Because he really is a great, nice. Great player. So I had him, I had Sid... And then I had Cloud. This most recent
That's my party. That was my thank you. Party. Thank you. Thank you for,
that was your
thank
party.
You for before
and,
I could say
oh,
it.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But I agree with you. That is a solid party. I enjoyed having that.
And I'm so weird with it, too, because like I feel like certain materia belong to certain characters.
Uh-huh.
Like, Cloud always has enemy skill. Always has my enemy, the main
yeah,
enemy
I
skill.
I do that very constantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, eventually, once you get enough of them, I throw enemy skill on everybody.
Just, how annoying is it, though, when you have that other enemy skill that just has a couple just there?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Ah, what do I do with you?
Cloud has enemy skill. Sid always has the healing material. I use him as the healer for some reason. Vincent always gets Ultima, always gets Mime, always gets Hades.
Okay.
Cloud always gets Knights of the Round.
I see what you're doing. Yeah, it kind of makes sense. You know, Hades with you know, like all the kind of destruction sort of belongs with Vincent. He seems like a little demonized.
I don't know why I like Ultima with him, but I just do. Mm. But then when Cloud goes down and Sid's the party leader, Sid gets all Cloud's materia.
Okay. Fully takes over as a leader.
I'm so anal about that. And when Sid's my party leader, I go Sid, Vincent, and Barrett. I don't know why. I just like it.
Okay. Mm.
The only drawback, though, with Vincent is his limit breaks when he transforms. You can't really control
right.
him.
You're out of control.
Well, yeah, like if you're using Galleon Beast and you're against an enemy that heals with fire.
Yep.
And he starts shooting fireballs at people.
Oh, yeah.
That's
backfires.
A problem.
Gotta be smart
at it. Pun intended. But
that's
why
I don't bring him into the GI cave.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no point.
Yeah.
He's worthless in the GI cave.
I take Eris and Red in there with me. Mm. Okay, so let's talk. Like, were there any bosses that really gave you a hard time?
I mean, originally, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, weapons aside, things like that. You know,
yeah, I'm talking regular bosses that you have to do to get the game.
Yeah, I mean, I know first playthrough, Lost Number, and he was just a thorn in everybody's side. He was impossible.
So, yeah, because then if you always want to hit him with the magic, because if he hits that physical attack side of him,
oh yeah,
you're done.
Yeah, you had to take out the physical side first. But again, when you first go into there, I think you're a little under-leveled, and I think that's what they planned on, was that you would get smoked by that guy for a while.
Right, you could always go
leave,
back.
And you can go back, and you can take him out whenever you want.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine. It's nice and easy later on when you're over-leveled for it. But yeah, he was tough, and the, I believe what was it, Guard Scorpion down in,
What?
Yeah.
Number one reactor.
Not the first.
That's Guard Scorpion.
I forget his name. Something Materia Keeper.
Yeah. Oh, so they were right back to back.
Yeah,
for
right
you.
Back to back.
So you're
yeah,
having a
absolutely
horrible.
That was
time.
Rough. That was my. Okay, do I need to play this game anymore? Moment.
He teaches you Trine.
Yes, I did.
You learned Trine from
exactly.
Him.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Jackie, any for you?
It's going to have to be at the end of the game, which is probably why I didn't finish it the first time I played it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, save for Sephiroth. He was rough.
I couldn't finish the game, and I was like, fuck this. I left it, and I was so invested in the game, too,
Jackie's
so it really took a lot of tries. It took a lot of tries. I was like, forget it.
I'm
done.
No, no way.
Yeah.
And that was my mistake, because I didn't breed chocobos, so I didn't go to the Materia Caves,
okay.
I didn't get Knights of the Round, so I was very ill-prepared, and when you're chocobo breeding, you're leveling up.
Yeah,
so
true.
I wasn't leveled up, I didn't have the right materia, I wasn't going to win. I probably could have, but I didn't.
I mean, we all know I didn't like Gion Attack.
Right.
He bothered me.
Yeah.
Until
yeah.
I realized how easily I could have defeated
him. Right.
But there was one boss in this game, one bane of my existence. Mm. That trounced me for 6 months.
Oh, what? Man. Yeah, this can only be one.
Yep. Demon's Gate.
Absolutely.
Fuck you, buddy.
Oh.
And you know, the funny thing about Demon's Gate is, well, not funny thing, but in the new Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn, Demon's Gate makes an appearance.
I'm not playing.
There's a lot of fan service in that game.
I'm not playing. TJ's been trying to convince me to play FF14 with him, but if Demon's Gate's in that game, I'm running the other direction.
He's a demon wall.
Spooked,
and
huh?
he's a max level, you know, level 50 dungeon boss.
Yeah, of course he is.
Yeah, of course he is.
He's waiting for you, Kevin.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because in that one especially, there's no walls on the side. You're fighting him on a narrow pathway. And not only does he just kick your ass, but he could also repel you away from the wall. Ugh. And if you're not pointing the right direction, you're being repelled sideways. So you just fall to your death.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. So they made it even harder.
They basically added a layer of difficulty to Demon's Gate, which is very well appreciated.
I still get this sense of just 12-year-old dread when that head pops out of that wall.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when I finally beat him, it was like the biggest, like... Yeah! Moment of my life.
Yes, I remember
off the TV. Like,
I remember
actually
running downstairs and screaming to my entire family, "I beat him!" It was glorious.
I was doing like the Stone Cold Steve Austin middle fingers at him before I even knew what that was. Like, oh my god!
Is it on your resume? Defeated Gatekeeper.
I defeated Demon's Gate.
You know what?
Special skills.
That should be on a resume.
Seriously,
tough,
dude. If I was interviewing for people at work, I'd be like, "Oh, defeated Demon's Gate.
Oh yeah. Wow! And only 14 tries. Oh my gosh!
This guy's a go getter.
He needs a raise."
Did you guys ever hear the controversy with the ending? We're gonna need to start wrapping up here.
But we didn't go through all the side quests.
There's so many. There's so many more to go through.
Okay, let's like rapid fire rattle them off. You got the pagoda.
Oh, yes, which I definitely completed this last time. And how funny is it when you have Knights of the Round and you use that against her dad? Because
I've never done that before.
And
that's incredible.
What? The battle is over within, like, seconds, right? Well, uh-huh. Most of it is just all the cutscenes because that thing is long, that attack.
Yeah.
But once that's done... It's over, pretty much. And then you cut back to the pagoda, and both Yuffie and her dad are, like, just sprawled on the ground like they actually fought or something.
Yeah, like they actually did something. No,
did you really? No.
Her dad just got smacked around.
Yes, he actually should
times.
Be dead.
Yeah.
By big, scary knights with big medieval weapons.
Who I always thought were just undead, which just added a nice extra layer.
I earned that Leviathan. I earned it.
Yeah. What else do we have? We have the Golden Saucer.
Yeah, yes. The Golden Saucer just rife with.
Which, oddly enough, is actually also making an appearance in Final Fantasy XIV, Reborn.
Yeah. And that is enough to make me want to play again.
Yes, it is going...
Demon's Gate driving me away, Golden Saucer bringing me back.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Fantastic. Golden Saucer, I spent a lot of time earning those GP, and it was very, very frustrating. But my favorite part of the Golden Saucer, and probably everyone else, is Battle Square. Without a doubt, hands down.
Yeah,
I would constantly go in there. I mean, it's the only way you can get Omni Slash.
Yeah, slot
only
machine
way you can get W summon.
Slot machine skill definitely comes into play when you're in there.
Yes, absolutely. The nice little trick on there. I'm sure everyone knows this one by now, but pressing the square button actually repeatedly over and over again acts as a sort of slow motion.
What?
Because the square button is your kind of help. It tells you like, press this button to do blah blah blah. But what it actually does, if you just repeatedly hit it over and over again, it slows that slot machine down. It just sort of, you know, clips it frame by frame.
The
so
fuck
you can
out
sort of
here.
Just mash on that square button until you get what you want, switch over to X once, and you're done. And
what?
There you go. But I advise against doing that for Lucky Sevens, because you end up leaving the entire battle with about 150 battle points, which is just minuscule. Waste of time. So you want the tough draws.
Oh, really? Like, is that what does it? I never even realized.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, sometimes I got out of there, I'm like, oh, I got 30 freaking points for
right,
this.
Right, yeah. The tougher your slot machines end up, the more points you earn for it.
Okay.
So if you can somehow manage to lose the same materia four straight times, it's still losing that much of your those points.
Or if like you're getting turned into a frog, but you have the anti frog
exactly
armor.
Yeah.
Okay,
exactly. Yeah, or mini, and you have a white cape on.
Yeah, uh-huh. Do you remember those? Set. Yeah, right. There's a quiz for you. Cornucopia.
Oh,
what is that for? Go. Maiden's Kiss. Go.
Maiden's Kiss is the frog.
Maiden's Kiss is the frog. There you go.
Yeah,
that
I knew.
Cures
that.
All that.
Mm-hmm. That was a frog.
Yeah, until your next draw.
That's always the worst.
It takes items away, and
it's
then you're screwed.
I have got five fights left, and I just got turned into a fucking frog.
Yep.
But you're so cute, aren't you?
Yeah, but all that was one damages. I don't think they're going to do much.
Yeah.
Now, what was your favorite game in the arcade area?
Favorite game in the arcade was the, it had to be the submarine game.
Oh, really?
Was my favorite. Mm-hmm. I used to love just going in there and just, you know, rocketing away. It was a lot of fun. I liked the snowboarding too, and the motorcycle was okay. But that one kind of annoyed me more than anything, just because the timing of it was a little awkward.
I could see that.
I'm surprised you didn't list Mog up there. What?
Well, I mean, Mog you only did once. Once you beat it once.
Maybe you only did it once. Oh. I did many times.
We are huge fans
once
of that game.
Once you complete it once, there's really no point to do it again, because the rewards aren't that great.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Watching him fly.
That's a sweet story,
breathe,
though.
That's all the reward I need, man.
And he has all the little Moogles coming out of that tree.
He got
one,
busy.
Two,
give me a little more
20,
GP
30.
For it. Make my time more worthwhile.
Well, you know,
I'll go
when you first get there, you're like, oh, this GP, where am I going to get this GP from?
Yeah.
And then you start chocobo breeding, and you're just like, I've got more GP than... I've got Scrooge McDuck's money bin full of
GP.
That's
the way to do it.
That I can swim around. I've got more GP than I've got Gil at this point.
Yeah, especially once you find that one point where every now and then you go into the gold saucer, you can buy GP from that skeevy dude behind the counter.
Yeah.
That was nice. I used to kind of just go in and out until I could find him. And just buy my GP, because I got so sick of it.
Another thing that I would love about the Gold Saucer was, being someone who frequents theme parks constantly, they're always looking to charge you for something.
Yeah.
The fact that you had to pay for the save point.
Oh, yes. Yeah. How low is that? Come on.
I'm like, this is, what is this, Universal Studios?
You need the bathroom? That'll be $5.
Yeah. It reminded me of, at Universal Studios, they have this Popeye ride, and it's a log flume. You get drenched in this ride, dude. Like, drenched. They have this, like, hyperbaric chamber the second you walk out, and it's like a drying chamber where you can literally step inside, and it's just like, and it dries you completely.
What's it like? Oh, okay.
$5.
Wow, they make you pay to dry off.
It's like, we...
That
we,
pissed me off
They've
so
harnessed
much.
The power of the sun, and they are charging you $5.
We drenched you, and now if you want to be dry and not walk around in wet sneakers all day, guess what you're
it's
doing?
It's just a large bathroom dryer.
Yeah, really,
here you go, $5.
They really sink in on that one, huh?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Any other side... Oh, there's the... Have you guys ever done the Ancient Forest? Because we tried to do it this last time, and I was just like...
Yeah, I'm like, screw this.
I've done it.
Heavily guided. I've never ventured in there on my own without, you know, a map of how exactly to do it. But you kind of need to, because there's a couple of really important things in there that you need to get. I mean, I'm losing them off the top of my head, but I believe one of them might be the Apocalypse Sword, which is the 3x materia growth. I believe you get that in there. If not, then, you know, feel free to correct me. But yeah, there are a lot of important things that you need to get inside that Ancient Forest. So I suggest looking up a guide, you know, doing something for it if you really need to.
It would be easier if you weren't constantly interrupted with battles, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, Wutai is an optional place to go. But I want to throw something out there that you should definitely try if you've never done it before. Don't go to Wutai right away. Wait until Cid is your party leader.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about this
before. Or Tifa.
I still haven't tried it yet.
You get a completely different experience. Because, like, when Don Corneo shows up, Cid's just like, who the fuck is this guy?
Right.
Like, he has no idea who he is. It's hysterical.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, he would have had no interaction with Don.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of Don, just the creepiest character in the entire game.
Oh, God,
in my opinion, hands down.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely is.
Remember the slums?
Oh, God. How could I forget?
Jackie's
it's burned into my
dress
brain.
Up.
Yeah, Jackie is always obsessed with getting Cloud to look as pretty as humanly possible.
Well, you
have
to. You want to get chosen, right?
I don't. I certainly don't. Because
I'm thinking in Cloud's mind, he does not.
I get my wig,
that
I get my dress, I'm out.
Comedic gold, though. Come on.
It is really funny.
It is hysterical.
There's certain things you can do to get Aeris chosen, which usually Tifa gets chosen. But like,
yeah, it's
some...
difficult to get Aeris chosen.
Yeah.
I like out-prettying them, because
also,
they are gorgeous, but Cloud,
you know,
can do better.
Yeah, you gotta have that satin dress, right?
The date that you go on at the Gold Saucer can be with many different people.
It can be many. I've heard of two.
Aeris or Tifa, yes, but apparently, and I've never tried this myself, but I've heard that you can go with Barret.
You can go on a bro date?
Yep, you go on a bro date, and you go bet on the chocobo races and stuff like that.
No way.
Yeah, and somebody once told me, and I don't know how true it is, this might be, you can get Supernova if you master all the materials. Somebody told me you can get Yuffie also.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta look that up. See,
I wonder how that would go. Would she just steal your
material while you're on? Are you sure somebody didn't just tell you this 20 years ago?
Maybe. I have heard the Barret thing from more than one person.
Yeah.
I see TJ typing on his iPad right now.
No. I'm just shutting it down. Yeah, I can't look it up that quickly. That's a little too much.
So is that it for side quests?
Pretty much. I'm sure there's others that we missed, but
yeah, Chocobo Sage is a piece of garbage.
Yeah, Chocobo Sage can just go die. Yeah, and I mean that's about it. If there was anything else, it's not quite important.
Yeah. Now the thing we need to talk about at the end is the thing that Final Fantasy VII fans have been screaming about since the PS3 first came out, and Square was like, you know what we're gonna do for this PlayStation 3? We're gonna make a Final Fantasy VII opening just to show what these graphics look like.
Yep.
And then everybody saw it and they were like, give us the game.
Yep.
Remake the game. And Square is just like, we do not have the time to do this. And everyone's like, every Final Fantasy game that has come out since 10 has sucked, so just give us this one again. Square has said that if they're ever going to do it, it will not be until another Final Fantasy game surpasses 7 in quality.
This has actually very recently, I'm talking about last couple of days, been updated.
Really?
Yeah, I actually just read an article. I'm trying to pull it up right now, but I can't find it very quickly. The original director of Final Fantasy VII says that he would be 100% down to make a remake. Here's the catch. As long as Square does not do it. Because he is so disappointed in where Square has gone with their remakes and their sequels and all that. He says the quality of their games has been declining, and he does not trust a remake of that game, which is basically his crowning achievement, Square's crowning achievement, to be in their own hands.
Well, then it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. There's no way.
But, you know, the thing about the FF7, think about FF7 and how great it is that, you know, Cloud and other FF7 characters have popped up in several other games.
Several.
I mean, let's run them down. Final Fantasy Tactics was the first one.
Right, Tactics, you had Cloud.
You can get Cloud, you can get him late in the game, though, when he starts at level 1, so he's kind of useless.
Right, useless, but I still did it every time because I'm a fanboy.
Of course. Obviously, Kingdom Hearts 1, Kingdom Hearts 2, Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories.
Right.
He's in all three of those. He's got you know, in 2, he's in a little bit more than he is in 1. In 1, we'll get into that in 2 weeks, what Cloud does there.
I don't know if you can count Dissidia, because that was kind of just...
I am counting Dissidia. Both Dissidia games.
Yeah.
Which Cloud... A lot of people were really disappointed with Cloud in the first Dissidia, because his storyline was kind of weak. It was Cloud just kind of brooding the entire time. Like, oh, why do we fight, and where do we come from, and blah, 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 blah.
That gets old quick.
Yeah, it does. Now, also in Dissidia is Sephiroth.
Yes.
And in Dissidia, in the second Dissidia, Sephiroth, Cloud, and Tifa.
Oh, wow. I didn't play the second one.
Yuffie is in Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, and Chain of Memories.
Right.
Sephiroth is in 1 and 2, and Tifa is in 2. Aeris is in 1, Chain of Memories, and 2, and Cid is in 1, Chain of Memories, and 2.
Right. And
Zack is in Birth by Sleep.
Yes. Right.
Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep. But we're missing the big one, the one that everybody played back in high school because we just loved this game so much. Air Guys. Do you not remember Air Guys?
I do remember Air Guys, but I played it for maybe a week.
It was a fighting game.
Yeah. This was pre-Dissidia. It
was a fighting game. It was just a regular fighting game, but in order to sell... It's like literally, I think they made a fighting game that nobody wanted. And in order to sell the game, Square was like, we're going to throw in Cloud, Tifa, Sephiroth, and Vincent.
Right.
So just lovable characters.
Yep. And you could just play as them in the game. It was awesome. And Zack, you can get Zack too.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, he was basically just a different version of Cloud.
Just a reskin of Cloud, yeah.
Well received? I don't remember hearing about it.
I loved it.
It wasn't very well received at all.
It was
kind of a niche type of thing. If you loved it, if you liked it, you loved it. If you didn't like it, you've never bothered playing with it again. I was kind of on that fence of it back then. I may want to revisit it now, though. You know, as far
Air Guys?
I
don't think it will hold up well.
Well, it certainly won't. I'm very used to that.
Good luck finding it.
Yeah, exactly.
PlayStation Plus or something like that.
Right. But yeah, no, I was never big into that one. But it was a huge game. It was very, very big.
I need to quote my friend Joe again, because he said about the FF7 remake potential. He said, if that ever happened, I would go to the store and I would buy every single copy of it.
Why is that?
Just in case anything ever happened to any of the other ones.
I was about to say, just in case he wants to play it more than once?
Yeah. Just buy every single copy.
Wow.
Because it would be the... it would listen, that game, you could sell that game for $150 and people would still buy it.
Absolutely. I mean,
remake of the greatest game ever made.
People are buying the original for $150 right now. Yeah, you know, if you can find it, you can find a not even a sealed copy. A lot of used copies of the original, they're going on eBay for $150-$200.
Yeah.
It's
have two of them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. This treating them like gold now. A lot of gaming.
Yeah, and you know what somebody said to me, somebody who doesn't really get this. I was talking about the show. And I said, our first one's going to be Final Fantasy VII. And he goes, the most overrated video game of all time. And I just
clearly
stared at
someone
him.
Who hasn't played it.
Yep. And yep. I said, you're saying this because you've never experienced it. And folks, you know, anything else, guys, closing remarks, anything you want? Oh, there was a controversy with the ending. Initially, people thought that at the end, humanity was wiped out.
Yeah, I got that vibe the first time I played through, and
like wholly wiped out all humanity.
Like it was basically, you know, like they had to rebuild everything. Just I think what really confused the whole thing was the whole scene with Red and I guess his new family.
Yeah, but that's like 500 years in the future.
Exactly, and that's the thing. I don't think that they explained that very well.
No,
that
because all you see is everything is overgrown, and then you just see him and his family, and you're like, well, did just animals survive and humans? What happened to them? You don't see any humans.
Well, yeah, but at the end of the day, it doesn't mean that they're not there. I mean, you see in Advent Children, you see that Midgar is still a shell city, and they build this new city called Edge, which is like supposed to be their new Midgar.
Yeah.
And Midgar, it always stays a barren, desolate wasteland.
But see, you said that they actually explained this in Advent Children.
They do.
Right?
They do.
If you don't see that, then you don't know that. You just go away from the game.
And that's what
thinking.
Finally, Advent Children and Dirge of Cerberus is what finally put an end to the argument that, maybe humanity got wiped out by Holy at the end of the game.
Right.
I always refused to believe it because I thought that would just be a horrid, horrid ending.
Oh, I thought it would too.
Would that really be so bad, though?
Yes! Your heroes fight
for humans to cause their own destruction.
Yeah, but then your heroes are fighting for nothing because they're fighting to stop Meteor from destroying humanity and then Holy destroys humanity. It would just be.
Can't always have a happy ending.
You're exactly right. I think that's the biggest thing is that, and I'll fall victim to it too. I always like the happy ending. I'm not a big fan of the dreary, you know, think about it, you know, like this makes a perfect. You know, a sad ending. I don't know. I feel like in a video game, in a movie, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
In a video game, you're really kind of working through all this yourself. You're putting your all into this to try to complete this game and have a good feeling about it, and then to turn around and just feel miserable about it. I feel like that's just kind of productive to what a video game's supposed to be.
It's artistically. You can see it as something beautiful.
Exactly.
You can turn it around and be like, well, that's actually something sad and beautiful at the same time.
The end of...
Which makes it very powerful. But yeah, when you play through and you're putting so much power, so much work into it, it sucks.
The end of Final Fantasy X ruined me for weeks.
Yeah, and I'll still have to
go
in and experience
that on
my own.
In fact, I played Final Fantasy X too just so that... Because I knew it was going to negate the ending of X.
Oh, okay.
And eventually just got to the point where I was like, fuck this game, and I just went on YouTube and watched the ending. but yeah, like, I argued against this this humanity was driven extinct theory with the same venom that today I fight Commander Shepard was indoctrinated theory in Mass Effect 3, which we'll get to on a future show.
I'm tingling now, but all right, yeah, let's keep going.
Okay, so, you know, the concept of a remake, I hope so. Someday, somewhere.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts before we close it up here?
Can we end with a little Chocobo song?
Come on, DJ. All right, that's enough.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Folks, thank you so much for joining us on this inaugural episode of Boss Fight. What a great time we had today. We went way over my personal rule about keeping shows to an hour. We're closing on an hour and a half right now.
Ooh, yikes.
And TJ thought we were going to have trouble filling an hour before this show, folks. I promise I'll try to keep the rest of these to an hour. But since this was the first one and we were talking about one of the greatest games of all time, I figured, hell, we'll let it go for an hour and a half. Folks, that will do it for TJ Bogart, for Jay Lee, Jacqueline Leon Kessler. I am Kevin Kessler. Thank you for joining us for Boss Fight. Hit points are over. You just won the boss fight. Ciao, folks. We will see you next week.
Game over.
Oh, that's a good one. Game over.
That's a good one.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at White Dragon PN.